Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 400 of the Box Hard Podcast. We've hit a milestone there, one that I don't think I would have ever seen coming if someone would have told me that we'd make it to 400 episodes at the very start, back in, I think it was September of 2015. It's incredible. But here we are. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm sure you already know that. And I'm joined by, I'm sure you already know, former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. Happy to be on for 400. That's nice. But I'm doing great, man. Great. How about you, Joe?
Yeah. I'm very good. Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Yeah, obviously, you're 41 years of age now. It's almost like 10 of you. It's amazing having 10 of you as episodes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's awesome. No doubt about it. When you get to be as ancient as I am, that's amazing thing. That's an amazing accomplishment, Joe.
There we go. Couldn't have done it without you, my friend. Let's start with the review part of the show. We're going to start here at the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, Lancashire, United Kingdom, over here, of course. Return to the ring for former flyweight WBC world champion, Mr. Charlie Edwards, friend of the show. He's now 18-1, a good return to the ring for him. He banked 6 rounds there against Darwin Martinez, who's now 8-10 with 2 draws. We've seen Martinez over these shores in the past, mainly losing, but last time out picked up a win. I can't remember the guy's name that he beat, but he took his O, if I'm not mistaken. And he's quite durable, and yeah, he went the distance. I think the fight ended up being at featherweight there, which obviously is, you know, more than what Charlie would have wanted to box at. But anyways, it is what it is. Fantastic stuff. I think Charlie is, I'm pretty sure, a bantam. I don't even think he's super bantam, but he's had to have a fight here at featherweight. But yeah, good stuff for him to return back to the ring there. Moving now to this one that also took place on Friday night. This one was at York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. It was live on BT Sport. I was there ringside. Let's fly through this card as quick as possible. We had Tommy Fletcher with a knockout win against Pavel Strykowski. We had Joshua Frankham with a points win over Eligio Palacios. We had wins for brothers Carl Fowle and Ben Fowle. Both managed to pick up knockouts, actually. I was quite surprised to see Ben Fowle get a first round knockout against Bartosz Glowacki, who had never been stopped. He's now 6-13 with a draw. I believe that's the first time he's been stopped. I think he went the distance with Carol Itauma, if I'm not mistaken. So that was quite amazing. I actually missed that fight there. I got there slightly late. And basically, I was just kind of shocked because, yeah, he got the stoppage in the first round. I really thought that one would go the distance. One I did think would go the distance as well, which did, was Royston Barney Smith. He's now 6-0, a points win for him over 6 rounds against the very tough Christian Flores, now 14-26 with 2 draws. I mentioned Carl Fowle, of course. Ezra Taylor with a points win as well. Another one that I saw coming. He's now 6-0 with, I think it's 4 KOs. A points win there over 8 against Khalid Gradia, who's now 10-11 with 4 draws. Ezra Taylor at times, I was watching him, you know, I think he's got some fantastic moves. Like the way he moves around the ring, glides around, the little move of the shoulders. I can tell he's probably a fantastic dancer, but something he does need to work on is blocking that left hook, because he kept getting clocked again and again and again with it. And I was a little bit worried if this guy perhaps packed a bit more power in that left hand, we'd see Taylor in a world of trouble. But he got through it. Like I say, it wasn't very pretty for him. One fight that was really pretty was Henry Turner. He moved to 11-0, a corner retirement in at the end of round six against Tom Farrell. I thought this one would always go the distance. Tom Farrell, I said on last week's show, had never been stopped, but actually, of course, he does have that one stoppage loss to O'Hara Davies all those years ago. It was for the WBC International Silver Super Lightweight title. Henry Turner boxed to perfection, pretty much punch perfect. Really impressed. Like I say, I think he's improving fight by fight. I thought Tom Farrell would be able to give him a real tough, stern test, and it would go down, like I say, to the cards, and we'd see Henry Turner perhaps nick a very close decision. But no, he I won't say he walked through Farrell, because Farrell, you know, he's so tough, you can't really walk through him, but he took such a shellacking in the early rounds, and it just caught up with him. I think his corner said, look, you do not need any more rounds of this. You've lost every round. And like I say, Henry Turner looked real spiteful. Really, really, really good performance from him. Definitely the best of his career thus far. Moving up the card again, Mark Chamberlain. Again, I thought it was worth a punt. I think I said it on last week's show, worth a punt for 4-1 for him to win by decision. And he made me look quite silly with a first round TKO. He's now 13-0. Well, I'm going to talk about this actually. A TKO in the first there against Marvin Demolari, who's now 12-5. It was the first time he'd been stopped. It was for the IBF European lightweight title. Demolari down twice and then his corner threw the towel in. The first knockdown, Demolari goes down and gets straight back up, and then Chamberlain carries on hitting him. And then Demolari looks to the referee like, whoa, you know, are you not going to give me my count and dust off my gloves? And he literally drops his guard while Chamberlain hits him at free will. Then the referee decides, oh, actually, yeah, you did go down. Let me give you a count. But by that point, he's already took a few clean punches after getting up from a knockdown. So soon as the referee gives him a silly little count, he allows Mark Chamberlain to run straight back over there to finish off the job. And yeah, he goes down again, gets back up again, and then goes, I think, down again as the corner threw the towel in. So it was a bit kind of, I don't know, it was a bit, I don't know what to say. It was like borderline, I think, getting close to possibly a DQ if we're going by the book here, you know, to drop a guy, let him get back up and then carry on hitting him. But then I think it was pretty much down to the referee just not being quick enough to enforce what he should have been doing. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the referee was Bob Williams, who a couple of times recently has made some bad mistakes. So yeah, it was actually extremely dangerous. And from what I've heard, apparently Frank Warren was going crazy at ringside. I didn't actually see that. I haven't seen it back on TV, but yeah, I couldn't see him going crazy when I was there, but apparently he did, and rightfully so. It was just a joke, actually. And then, yeah, the main event, David Adelaide with a win, another stoppage win. He's now 12-0 with, I think, 11 by KO. It was for the WBO European Heavyweight title. A retirement win after five rounds against Emir Amatovic, now 12-2 in round five, like I say. Amatovic was quite tough, you know, took some big shots. I think it must have been his partner ringside was sitting a few seats away from me going absolutely crazy. Like, she obviously didn't read the script that this guy's being brought in here to get knocked out by David Adelaide. She was going crazy every single time Adelaide would land a big shot and rough him up and stuff, and kind of felt sorry for her more than anything. But I think Adelaide took quite a while to kind of get going, you know. He just sometimes to me seems quite slow, quite sluggish, a bit of a slow starter maybe. And he's got that look. And I was talking to a pro boxer that I won't name drop, but I was talking to somebody and we both kind of agreed he's got kind of got that look where he kind of looks tired. He's got that look that he looks tired all the time, even if he's not tired. Because, yeah, he did look quite tired in round one, which I thought was pretty strange. The mouth seemed a bit open and stuff like that, but perhaps just that's just the look that he has naturally. But yeah, win for him in the end. Like I said, it wasn't a close fight or anything. And then, yeah, moving to the Olympia in Liverpool, Merseyside, United Kingdom over here. It was for the vacant Commonwealth super flyweight title. We saw Marcel Braithwaite with a win. He's now 15-3 with a draw, still yet to pick up a knockout victory. He was able to beat unanimously over 12 Ryan Farag, who I think was coming off quite a long time out the ring. He's now 21-5. Didn't get to see the fight because obviously I was at York Hall, but I've heard it was extremely close, and that maybe Braithwaite nicked it just by the skin of his teeth. And that's what I predicted. I said I think he'll win. He'll probably win on points if he's going to win anyway. I don't see him stopping Farag, but what does Farag have left at this point? And it very much mattered on which version of Farag turned up. So from what I'm hearing, it seems like quite a decent version of Farag turned up, considering the inactivity of recent times. But I think Farag probably always was the much classier boxer than Braithwaite. But, of course, his best days are well and truly in the past now. And Braithwaite, as I said, with that more recent kind of activity, I think was able to capitalise and probably just about outwork Ryan Farag. Moving now to the Commerce Casino in California, USA over here. Just one fight to mention, the Irishman Callum Walsh. Shout out to him. He's now 7-0, I think, with 6 KOs. A knockout, I think it, I can't remember if it was round 3 or round 4 now, against Carson Jones, the veteran, now 43-16 with 3 draws. Obviously, you know, Carson Jones, teak tough guy. I thought that there was some value in Callum Walsh to go the distance there, but it turned out to be wrong. I've not seen him fight before, but to throw him in at just 6-0 against someone like Carson Jones goes to show that Tom Loeffler obviously has a hell of a lot of faith in this guy, and he's proved him right to have that faith there. That one was for the WBC USA Silver Super Welterweight title. All the best there to Callum Walsh, probably going places, I'd say. Moving now, though, to the Casino Miami Jai Alai over here. This one, of course, in Florida, Don King Productions. We saw Guillermo Rigondo move to 22-3, a knockout for him in round 7 against Charlie Clemente Andino, who was undefeated 12-0, but I don't think he boxed in about 7 years. The fight ended up taking place at Super Bantamweight. I didn't see it at all. If you did see it, Eddie, then you're more than welcome to jump in. If not, then probably don't. But yeah, Rigondo with a knockout win, we don't always say that. And then yeah, the main event, again, I didn't see it. I decided to just go to bed. Adrian Broner now 35-4 with a draw. It was his 40th fight. A 10 round unanimous decision against a guy called Bill Hutchinson, who was 20-2 with 4 draws, who of course I think is a part-time boxer, part-time attorney. And from what I heard, Adrian Broner almost had him out in round 1, but then as the fight went on, seemed to kind of fade a little bit. And you know, I think he was in full control, but it looked like he was just cruising to a points win from what I've heard. Again, Eddie, if you haven't seen any of it, maybe don't say anything. But yeah, Adrian Broner back, not with the splash that I think he probably needed, and it's not really much of a surprise. Moving out now, though, to the Casino Buenos Aires in Buenos Aires, Argentina over here. The Kazakh, Ivan Daiko, 12-0. He's now 13-0. A TKO in the second round against Ariel Bracamonte, now 12-11. He's had some real tough fights, Bracamonte. I swear to God, he goes in with absolutely anyone. It was for the vacant WBA Feder Karib heavyweight title. No idea how on earth Daiko has managed to fight for that belt. I don't think he's got any kind of Feder Karib blood running through him, but who knows. Bracamonte down in round 2, Ivan Daiko with the quick and easy knockout there. I'm not entirely sure what was going on there, because it seems like a bunch of different promoters were involved in that show. A lot of different promoters. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different promoters promoted that show as far as I'm aware. So I'm not entirely sure who Daiko's with, but there's a couple of names that I do recognise on that list of promoters. Obviously Greg Cohen and also Samson Lukowicz, so I'm sure he must be probably signed to one of those guys. But just was random to see him popping up in Argentina, and I haven't heard anyone else even mention that fight there. Moving now, though, to the Wembley Arena in London, United Kingdom. Again, Eddie, if you didn't see any of this, then perhaps don't jump in. I'm going to fly through it. I was at this card as well, very fortunate to be at boxing on Friday and Saturday. Can't say I've done that too many times in the past. Let's start with the undercard. I only managed to catch the last round of this fight, but Shannon Ryan with a points win as expected. She's now 5-0. A points win there against Martina Bernil, who's now 5-2 with a draw. I think it's the first time Shannon's done 8 rounds, so good stuff for her. Moving up the card again, Siobhan Clarke, now 6-0, a TKO for him in round 5 against David Jamieson, who usually is quite a tough, durable guy. I thought it would go a few rounds. I thought we'd see maybe the second half of the fight. But yeah, 5th round TKO there for Siobhan Clarke. Jamieson down once in the 4th and once in the 5th. Fought quite aggressively, Clarke, and he seemed to be full of confidence really from about the 2nd round. Johnny Fisher with a win, as expected. He's now 9-0, a TKO in the 1st round against Emilio Salas, who's now 7-5 with a draw. Salas been knocked out 4 out of 5 now in his loss column. Salas down from a left hook to the head prior to the stoppage. I actually just missed the shot as he threw it. I saw Salas drop to his knees. A lot of people saying he probably could have beaten the count. But yeah, Johnny Fisher did what he's supposed to do against an opponent of that caliber. And yeah, no surprise at all there. Elsewhere on the card, I don't know if I said this last week on the podcast or not, but I certainly had the feelings that this would be a really, really good fight. And it seemed to be, for me, probably fight of the night. It was, I don't think, on TV. I think it was on Before the Bell or whatever they call that program that they do on YouTube for free. Yusuf Kamari, now 15-2 with a draw. This is the fight I'm talking about. A 10-round unanimous decision win, though, for Rhys Bellotti, who upset the odds there, now 16-5. I always, you know, have never really written Rhys Bellotti off because I've been to many and many, many of his fights over the years, Rhys Bellotti. And, you know, you can never, like I say, write him off. I've always believed in his power, and he has a lot of it. And I kind of felt to myself that Kamari was probably the more polished boxer, but if he did get drawn into a war with Bellotti, then, you know, don't write Bellotti off. Like I say, I think I remember being at the Jason Cunningham and Rhys Bellotti fight, where Jason Cunningham probably won every round, and you know, he was boxing fantastically, and then God, when he got caught, boy oh boy did he get caught. And then yeah, Rhys Bellotti turned the fight on his head that night there. So yeah, I've seen him over the years bang people out. He's looked really good. There's been a few kind of disappointing performances from him, but I liked what I saw from him in the build up to this fight. Seemed like his head was screwed on and was coming off a decent win as well in his last fight, which admittedly was over a year ago. But yeah, he looked good last time out, and he seems like he's ready to kind of give his career one more serious run, I suppose. So that was great stuff for Rhys Bellotti, and he definitely, I think, deserved it. Fantastic for him. Moving up the card once again, we saw Nina Hughes pretty much completely dominate Katie Healy. Nina Hughes, friend of the show, now 6-0. Katie Healy now 6-1. It was a unanimous decision there over 10-2s at bantamweight for the WBA World Bantamweight title. Good to see Nina Hughes come to the ring with her son, her young son, carrying the belt above his head. Must have been a really proud young man seeing his mum walk out there, obviously, to a lot of claps and a lot of cheers. And yeah, just to see her dominate in the fashion that she dominated in. I mean, it must be mad watching your mother fight. Rather, you know, forget about watching your father fight, but seeing your mum fight someone must be kind of crazy. So yeah, I'm sure he was real proud after the fight had finished, and quite nervous throughout it, but good stuff. Like Nina Hughes, obviously, friend of the show. And even though Katie Healy came in on relatively late notice, she also, you know, put a decent effort in. Elsewhere on the card, again, we had her on last week's show. I wished her all the best. Shanika Johnson, she's now 15-2. She lost her IBF World Super Bantamweight title, a unanimous decision there in favour of Ellie Scottney over 10 2-minute rounds. Johnson plagued with another cut, this time over the opposite eye to the one that got cut horrifically. I shouldn't say the eye that got cut horrifically last time out, because last time out was her forehead, but it was the other side of her face that the blood streamed down. So basically, last time out, one side of her face had loads of blood down it. This time it was the other side. So yeah, she hasn't had much luck with cuts, but she did tell me that she's got a fantastic cut man called Craig. I don't know if he was in the corner this time, but I'm going to probably take a guess and say he was, because he managed, or whoever it was who was working on that cut, managed to do a great job with stemming the blood flow. Johnson, yeah, like I say, I think it was a head clash in round, I'm not entirely sure which round, but I think it was a head clash. But yeah, she just got pretty much you know, outboxed. I mean, Ellie Scotney for me was quite a clear winner. You know, I think obviously Johnson's really, really tough. We all expected, I think, deep down Scotney to win on points, still yet to secure a knockout victory. And yeah, Shanika Johnson, you know, it was what it was. She came and gave it a go, hung in there, you know, could have seen the blood and decided no. I think the cut really hurt her as well, because I saw her face in person, like, and I saw her wince from ringside. It looked like she'd really, you know, she really felt that cut open on her eye there. But yeah, like I say, I think Scotney deserved the win quite clearly in the end. Shanika Johnson, though, shown some toughness, of course, as we expect. And then, yeah, moving to the main event, Sonny Edwards with a successful defence of his IBF World Flyweight title, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds. Again, quite expected. He's now 20-0. He was able to beat unanimously Andres Campos, who's now 15-1. Campos, typical South American fighter, really, you know, full of heart, didn't give up at all, kept trying and trying and trying to land bomb after bomb after bomb, despite not really being a big puncher. If you look at his record, I think he only had about 4 KOs, but yeah, he seemed like he could punch quite a bit, and Tony Bellew apparently had it quite close, but just from what I could see sitting there, you know, Sonny Edwards was making Campos miss early on. He was countering him. And when the pair did engage, Sonny Edwards seemed to consistently be getting the better of the exchanges. I think as the fight wore on, Sonny did definitely, you know, slow down a little bit. The spring in his step had kind of vanished. But I don't know if Campos did enough to win, you know, a big number of rounds or anything like that. I don't know. I wasn't scoring the fight, to be honest with you, but it kind of, to me, probably felt like a 10-2, maybe a 9-3, maybe an 8-4 at the very worst, if you really want. But I didn't think it was a close fight at all. And when someone said ringside that, you know, Tony Bellew apparently has got it close, that's what they're saying, and everyone ringside was looking at each other like, that's got to be a wind up, isn't it? Like, the way he was making him miss, you know, it didn't seem close for us. I will say that not everyone in the arena was impressed. There was a man just two rows in front of myself that that fell asleep during the fight, like completely fell asleep. In the early rounds, he was shouting for Sonny Edwards, you know, supporting him and shouting advice, I guess. And then at some point, he dozed off and his head was almost in his lap. And then I got it on video, actually. The round had ended, and of course they ring the bell when the round ends. And that bell woke him up, and then he sat up, and then as soon as the round began for the next round, he went straight back to sleep. So that was almost, well, I say almost, it was incredibly funny. But yeah, he obviously didn't really enjoy too much what he was seeing. Moving now to the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California over here. I did say this could potentially be fight of the weekend. I'm hearing people say fight of the year. I'm hearing people say one of the best fights ever. I'm not entirely sure that I'd go that far, but the bits I did see of it, and I will hold my hands up and say I didn't watch the entire thing, because obviously it did end up clashing, sadly, with Teofimo Lopez and Josh Taylor, which we'll get to. But I did say on last week's show, I think it's going to be a really good fight. I think that Derevianchenko, depending on what he's got left, could provide Munguia with the very toughest test of his career. And a lot of people felt like Derevianchenko won the fight. It ended, though, with Munguia getting to 42-0, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds for the vacant WBC silver super middleweight title against Sergei Derevianchenko, now 14-5. All five losses, he has given his opponents serious issues, and obviously hasn't been knocked out, but has been down in a couple of those, but has managed to get back up. He was down in round 12 from a body shot. I actually missed that. I don't know if you saw it, Eddie. If you did, again, jump in. And I should also mention on the undercard, Shane Mosley Jr., now 20-4. I thought he'd have a little bit of a tough time against Demetrius Ballard, who is now 21-2 with a draw. But like we say, Ballard down in round 5. Shane Mosley Jr., Eddie, is someone we have said is getting better and better fight by fight. And this is more proof to back that point up.
Yeah, Shane Mosley Jr. has been looking, like you said, getting better progressively. Remember, he had the fight with Quigley, right? And he even, you know, it was a good, highly contested fight at that time from both guys. He looked better there from the time I seen it previous. And then each time recently he's gotten better. Like he's just, you know, I was the biggest Shane Mosley fan. So, you know what I mean? It's good to see his son doing well. You know what I mean? So, I was impressed at how he actually handled it. Still would like to see a little bit better defense, and not to take one to give one type of thing, but you know, I'm not in this corner. I can't tell him what to do. You know what I'm saying? I would just like to see that. It would be a lot better for his career, especially, you know, as he gets older. But all in all, exciting. Did a good, you know, threw a couple of nice shots in there. He got the stoppage. It's just, like I said, I would just like to see defense be a little bit more of a part of his game, to keep himself in there longer, maybe protect himself. Hopefully he won't be talking crazy after his career is over. But he's been in a lot of exciting fights, and I just don't want the wars to pile up. You understand what I'm saying? So, yeah, all in all, good. And he's getting better every time.
And Munguia ready?
Yeah. And Munguia, you know, it's the same thing with that. Like, I watched the highlights of it. And from what it was a long highlights, if you know what I mean. It was literally probably, you know, the whole fight. I mean, obviously, they showed every round and highlights of each round. But, man, and even watching it, you can kind of tell at some point, Derevyanchenko, like, he was starting to take over. His counterpunching ability was good. He even started, you know, with the head movement, making it a difficult target, movement in general. Punch selection was really good, really good. And Munguia, don't get me wrong, early on, Munguia was really, really, and they were both so busy. But he was landing some good long shots, some good hooks, a couple good right hands. But overall, as the fight progressed, you can just see it. The cream, I think, rise a little bit to the top. Not saying that Munguia is not, you know, the cream of the crop necessarily. I'm just thinking that the experience with Derevyanchenko, with high level opposition, and his overall skill level, just in general, started to shine through a bit, and he started to seem to be as he was not take over, like dominate the fight, but I thought he was winning up to that point. Even with the knockdown, I thought he still probably was ahead, but it was high drama though when he landed that. He landed that body shot and really, really hurt him. You could see it. I mean, it was he landed a shot after, you know, the I think the big shot was before, and it kind of hurt him. You see him kind of double over, and then as the round kept, as he kept pressing and pressing, he landed another one, which put him down. And it was like that was a crazy sequence to see go on. And you know, obviously, you know, they give Munguia a fight. He's, you know, he's a bit younger. He doesn't have the blemish. He's, you know, I guess they're looking at it. He's a better future. He's obviously younger. So maybe they saw that as the reason for giving him the fight. I don't know. I mean, obviously that's not what you're supposed to judge. You're supposed to judge according to the fight, which kind of upsets you when you see fights, like even when with Haney and Lomachenko, it's just, you can't think of the upside of the fighter. You got to think of the fighter who's fighting and what's going on in the ring. And it's just unfortunate that these guys have to deal with this, you know, with the whole popularity thing and who's going to be the future and all of this and that, and not just, you know, what the fight is that night and the fighter of that night. So it's unfortunate, but Munguia gets the decision. I don't necessarily agree with it 100%, but hey, you know, it's boxing.
And moving now to the Madison Square Garden Theater in New York, USA. This is the final card to go over. Let's start with the undercard wins for Bruce Carrington. A TKO for him in round 8 of 8 against Luis Perozzo, now 16-7. Carrington now 8-0. Xander Zayas with a unanimous decision win over 8 rounds. I actually thought this could happen, but decided not to tell anyone and not to bet on it or anything. But it did end up going the distance. He's 16-0, a unanimous decision against the never-been-stopped Ronald Cruz, still never been stopped, now 18-3 with a draw. It was for the NABF and WBO, NABO super welterweight titles. Xander Zayas looked quite good. I think a few times in the fight, maybe a little bit frustrated that he couldn't get Ronald Cruz out of there, but he's just a tough guy, and of course he's going to come up against guys like that. Robson Conceição boxed on the card as well, 17-2, a no contest with Nicholas Polanco, 20-4 with a draw. bit of a mad situation, really. I was watching it, and I was really quite confident that Conceição would get the win. But obviously, round two, no contest, and it was, I think, a head clash, or it was apparently a head clash. When I looked back at the replay, it really didn't look like much at all. And I think Polanco absolutely milked it to high heavens. It was quite terrible. All the crowd were booing and stuff like that, and it was a real shame because I think Conceição would have won that fight, and you know, he wanted to bounce back after losing to Shakur Stevenson. Now he's probably going to go off and be a bit inactive for a few more months again, so it's not a great look. Henry Lebron, though, moved to 18-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Carlos Ramos, now 17-3. And moving up to the main event, Josh Taylor, now 19-1, a unanimous decision in favor of Teofimo Lopez, now 19-1 as well. They both got the exact same records in terms of their numbers. It is a victory there for Teofimo Lopez. He's now the new WBO World Super Lightweight title. Myself and you, Eddie, we were both split on how we saw this fight going. I actually was going with Teofimo Lopez. I said, I've just got this feeling that he's going to do it. And I know that you went with Josh Taylor. So, yeah, victory for me over you there. Ha, ha, ha. But, yeah, getting to the fight. Go on, Eddie. Yeah, a little laugh there, a little forced laugh. Yeah, moving to the fight, obviously, like I say, I can't remember. It was a little bit hard to keep an eye on the earlier rounds, to be honest, because like I say, I was still kind of flicking back and forth with Munguia's fight. But yeah, first round I gave to Taylor. Second round, I didn't score it. I'm not sure what happened there. Round three, I gave to Lopez. Round four, I gave to Lopez. And also in that fourth round, it looked like Taylor got rocked in the last seconds of that round. Round five, I gave a 10-10. Round six, I gave to Taylor. Round seven, Lopez. Round eight, 9-10, 11, and 12, Lopez as well. So I actually gave him every round of the last six rounds. And something that I just wanted to point out as well, people said Teofimo Lopez should be pulled out of this fight. You know, his ex-wife was taking half of his money. He's not in a good place mentally. He's talking loads of nonsense in interviews and at the press conferences. I didn't think he needed to go there when he said that he wanted to kill Josh Taylor in the ring and stuff like that. Like, there's no place for that. I think he went a bit far with that. But so many people jumped on his comments and said, oh, I'd be pulling him out. You know, if I had a say, I'd be pulling him out of the ring. If anyone cares about him, he should be pulling out of this fight. He's not in the right place. You know, he's going to lose. He's going to get absolutely steamrolled. Some of these things that people were saying, I thought were way too far. And for me, Teofimo Lopez has always been a little bit like this. I think he's always had one or two screws loose, but it doesn't take away from his talent, you know? And sometimes we've seen that in boxing repeat itself, really. I mean, he put in the performance, arguably, of his entire career. He was absolutely brilliant, and he dominated Josh Taylor. And like I say, I thought he would do that. I think it looked like the stoppage could even come late on. He seemed to be really hurting Taylor, particularly, I think, in round 12. Taylor seemed to be really holding on for dear life, you know, and yeah, I'm not really too interested in a rematch. I don't really care about that, but I just want to take my hat off to Teofimo Lopez, man, and how wrong some people are. They all like to jump on that bandwagon and say, yeah, I agree with that, actually. Yeah, shouldn't be fighting, yeah. And it just kind of, I don't want to sound like an expert, but I wasn't worried one bit about that. And I put a nice little bet on Teofimo Lopez to win that fight. And I don't think at any point was I worried about that, about losing that bet. I mean, I just really fancied him. And yeah, he looked awful, actually. Josh Taylor looked awful. You know, couldn't seem to have much success in terms of landing combinations and stuff like that. It was very much you know, straight basic ones and twos. And yeah, Teofimo Lopez, man, when he got going, which probably did take about four rounds or something, when he really settled in, he started to look special again. You know, you could see he was so comfortable in that ring. He's so comfortable. The confidence, you could just see it coming out of him. And yeah, he put in a fantastic performance. And, you know, once again, he is a massive, massive name. And yeah, that one loss to George Kambosos, you know what I mean? If they had a rematch and it was probably at 140, who would you favor? You'd probably pick Lopez. So yeah, I think once again he's in a fantastic position. And just thinking about it as well, obviously, you know, there was a bunch of names. We always talk about these same names, Eddie. you know, the kind of young superstars around the weights, the, you know, the Javonte Davises, the Ryan Garcias, the Devin Haneys, the Shakur Stevensons, the Teofimo Lopezes. I think that's probably all of them there. But, you know, everyone kind of moved around the weights. Javonte Davis, I think, moved up to lightweight. Devin Haney looks like he's moving to 140. Shakur Stevenson moved up to lightweight. Ryan Garcia, I can't remember. I think he's at lightweight, obviously. And, yeah, I think Teofimo Lopez is the first guy to, out of all of those guys, to pick up a belt at 140. So if Devin does move to 140, then, yeah, I think that's a great division for Teofimo Lopez and him to fight. So I think Teofimo was actually kind of, he looked like he was at the back of that race, but I think he's took a shortcut and ended up at the front right now in the first position, just if they'd move to 140. I mean, Devin Haney, I'm not trying to say he's not in the pole position. Of course he is. He's got all the belts at lightweight. But if he moves up and he doesn't have any belts anymore, he's going to find himself behind Teofimo Lopez, because Teofimo is the heaviest out of that bunch and is the only one with a title if Haney were to vacate. So, interesting. And it's a monopoly board at the minute, Eddie. But what did you make of the fight? I'm hoping you saw some of it.
Oh, no, I saw all of it. Yeah, I saw all of it. At first, it looked like, you know, what I said was going to happen. Josh Taylor's skills, his range, you know, that boxing ability and stuff was going to, you know, look like it was going to be. And then you start thinking, you know, because it took a little time, like you said, for Teofimo to really get settled in, get started, really get warmed up. And so it looked like that was going to be it. And then when his corner was telling him, like when Josh Taylor's corner was telling him, like, pick it up, stop letting him rest in spots, keep him working the entire time. So that way, if there's going to be any fade, we're going to see it and you're going to force it, which I agree with. I think that Josh Taylor, especially once he started to warm up, you could see the boxing ability was in the favor of Teofimo, the boxing ability and the explosive power. And punching in between spots, and just the creativity with his offense was definitely on the side of Teofimo. And I think the way that Josh Taylor could have kind of kept control or reestablished control was being busy, keeping him at range, but still pressing him, kind of like how Vladimir would do a smaller guy in the heavyweight division. But I don't think he wasn't able to do it. He wasn't able to keep it because Teofimo started to become more of a difficult target. And then the explosive power started to come. And it was like, if Josh Taylor would have been able to take the shots much easier and wouldn't have been affected by them, he would have probably been able to stay busy. He would have probably been able to get him to fall, you know, stay on the back foot and maybe pressed a little bit, maybe got him into some exchanges and would have possibly won those exchanges because of his, you know, his punch output, if that would have been the case. But he just couldn't. It was too much explosive power and speed and skill on the other side. And, you know, then you see him start falling, you know, really getting into the groove. And then the confidence raised. And then it was, at that point, it was pretty much over. And control went straight to Teofimo Lopez. So it was an outstanding performance, especially going toward the second half of the fight. Early on, like I said, it took a bit of time. You know what I mean? I can agree with you there, Joe. It took a bit of time for him to get in the zone that he wanted, that he needed to be in, to get in that gear. But, you know, he started to really look good, like almost like he was in there trying stuff. You know what I mean? Like, just let me see what happens if I do this. He was that confident. And it looked like when we talked about him, you know, around the time when he fought Lomachenko. You know what I mean? It started to look like that because obviously the last two fights we've seen haven't been, you know, before this one, haven't been really favorable. Obviously he lost to George Kambosos, and then he come back with, I cannot remember this guy's name for the life of me right now, Sandor Martin, and didn't look great, and most people thought that he could have lost that. But then to come in this fight and show what he did in the class and the ability and all of that, And you know, it just shows what he's actually capable of. And I like what you said about him finding the shortcut, because he damn sure did, because he stepped in front of a few guys with that. In fact, I'm not putting Haney down, saying Haney's not that guy or anything, but the way he looked in this fight with Josh Taylor, I don't know, you know, with his explosive power and his skill level, You know, Haney's obviously an extremely skilled fighter too, but I just think the edge once again goes in the explosiveness with Teofimo as far as the power is concerned. And I think they're close to equal in boxing ability. I mean, it's not that far off. So that would be an interesting fight where I don't know. There's going to be there'll be a lot more people now looking at that kind of a fight and saying, hey, Teofimo might be the guy. You know what I'm saying? In that fight. So, I mean, he's put himself now in a good place, obviously winning the titles, beating a guy like Josh Taylor, who had a hell of a resume up to this point in only 20 fights. So, you know, man, it's good. It's good to see where he is. A lot of the crazy stuff he was saying in the wild interviews he was having and some of the stuff he said, you know, he's a young guy. You know, he got to a high level really quick. You know what I mean? As a young guy, fought a Hall of Famer in one of his title fights early, obviously being Lomachenko, and it was a lot for him to digest, and then to lose to Kambosos and then have that fight with Sandor Martin. And it just was like, you know, it looked like meteoric rise, meteoric fall. And that's what, you know, most people thought. And then obviously he comes back and has a fight like this. Then he kind of says, okay, well, yeah, maybe he's still here. You know what I mean? Then hearing that statement, oh, do I still have it? You know, that puts a lot of doubt in people's mind when you're talking about a fighter, because, you know, boxing and sports in general there's so much of it is mental. And, hearing these types of things and these conversations that he's having with these guys, not being 100% confident or saying crazy things can kind of put you off. But from what I've seen in this fight, definitely one of the best guys out there. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the future with him. You know, hopefully he keeps his head together and focuses on boxing and obviously this whole thing with his girl or his ex-wife or whatever the situation is gets out of the way so he can see his kid and be around his kid, but also so he can get back to his career and do the great things that he can do and that he's capable of, obviously watching this past fight and this past performance going forward. It's just, you know, it's an exciting time for him. Hopefully he continues to get better.
Well, there we go. Eddie's just finished off part one. The final thing for me to do is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undisputed female super middleweight champion of the world. It is, of course, Miss Franchon Cruz de Zerm. Franchon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Joey.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I was torn there. I was going to either say undisputed super middleweight world champion or maybe the best dressed woman in boxing.
I'll take both.
there you go. But Franchon, welcome to the show. Like I say, it's the first time you've been on, so welcome once again. I think your pro career thus far has been very fascinating. Obviously, you turned pro November 2016 on your debut boxing Clarissa Shields. The fight obviously didn't go your way, but you did strike up a close friendship with Shields. Tell me how you subsequently became friends with an opponent, and also tell me what you remember about that fight. On paper, you potentially could literally have the toughest debut fight in women's boxing history.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it wasn't foreign to me because I've known Clarissa since she burst into the amateur scene. I was the top seed in the United States and one of the top. I was actually the top runner for the Olympic Games, and you know she had to really go through me to become the great fighter that she is now. And you know, it's just. It was a fight for women's boxing. 13 girls had turned her down, and I was at a point in my career. In my amateur career, I just came off of winning a bronze world medal at light heavyweight, and I wanted to go for the 2020 Olympic Games. And then I got the call from her manager about going pro in Vegas. And you know, I lived life on the edge, and I thought it was a great opportunity. I thought it would be fun, and you only live once. So that was like one of my main reasons for taking the fight. And I also had the mentality of a champion. I believe that I'm great too. I didn't let coming up short in a fight define me. And I felt, you know, I'm one of the best. So I just took the fight, 2.5 week notice, and now we're here.
Well, respect to you for that. Like I say, it's amazing to get the backstory. Obviously, after that fight, you had three fights in a row in which you won them all. A first round knockout against Latasha Burton, then the four round decision against Sydney LeBlanc, then the six round decision against Tiffany Woodard. That's just 11 rounds, you know, in those three fights before you then get the chance at a title. You obviously beat Maricela Cornejo. Tell me about that night you became champion of the world in just your fifth fight. And of course, in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas has always been, I guess, it's been a home for me. You know, I've made a lot of history there. And those three fights that you mentioned, I actually self-promoted and managed myself two of those fights.
Wow.
And that was an accomplishment for me. And then I was working at my job. I worked for the University of Maryland in the gym, and I got a call to actually challenge Maricela for her, you know, for the opportunity to become a world champion. And at the time, I had never even fought an 8-round fight. So I just jumped from six rounds to 10 rounds. And I just said, hey, this is an opportunity. And I see myself as one of the best in the world. And I took it and I proved that I was the best that night and became the WBC super middleweight champion of the world.
Yeah, you proved it that night, and obviously the fight wound up being a majority decision. After that, you came back in a non-title bout. Then, in your first defense, you boxed Cornejo again in the rematch. That time, you beat her unanimously, and of course, also pick up the vacant WBO title. The fight after that was the Alejandra Jimenez fight. Obviously, we know Jimenez fails a drugs test, and the results gets changed to a no contest. Then came the Ashley Curry fight, a non-title bout, and then we have to touch on your last fight. I mean, wow, the night you became undisputed, you box on that Taylor Serrano undercard at MSG. What a night of boxing for the females. you box the undefeated and unified super middleweight world champion Ellen Cederuz. You boxed excellently that night, a clear and wide unanimous decision. Did that night top the first win over Cornejo, Franchon, or no?
Yeah, well, if you take it back to the fight with Cornejo for the WBC belt, on paper, it's a majority decision, but if you saw the fight, it was a clear, clear unanimous decision. And you know, in boxing, you have politics. So as I kept growing in my career, and, you know, I just wanted to make sure there's no doubt left. By the time it was time for me to challenge for Undisputed, I didn't want to leave any reason for the judges to think it's a close fight. Ellen Cederuz is also a great talent as well. She's a top athlete. She's a talented boxer. And I felt that it was an opportunity to show what I can do. And that's not even the best of me. For all the fights that you listed, I will have a crazy backstory leading to the fight that people would not believe that I went through to get to that fight and become victorious. So I just liken myself to a diamond. I go through a lot of pressure. I go through a lot of adversity. But in the end, I'm always going to shine and I'm still going to be hard as a rock.
Well, there we go. And I look forward to the documentary one day, perhaps, Franchon, eh?
Yes, that would be amazing.
But yeah, just obviously, you know, you touch on it, and I'm sure, you know, boxers go through so many crazy, crazy things that people don't hear about. But to be a part of that event, obviously, look, you were amazing, you boxed fantastic, you become undisputed. But just to be a part of that event as well, I mean, Serrano Taylor, it was just amazing. Like, every boxing fan that has ever said anything negative about women's boxing, I think we all had to sit down and say, wow, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, I am a performer. People on my team consider me that. When the lights come on, when the stage is set, I go out there and do my best. My aspiration was to be a famous singer. So since I'm not in front of the mic, when I get on that stage to box, I show my talent. And I think I brought a lot to that card, even though it wasn't as publicized as Amanda and Katie's amazing fight. But I feel like I got the show started with an electrifying, dominant performance over Ellen Cederuz. And it was just a great night for boxing and women's boxing altogether. Like, when you look at Amanda's and Katie's fight and me and Ellen Cederuz, we were the most exciting ones on the card. So to be a part of that and to fight in a big part of Madison Square Garden Arena, that's something I'll never forget.
No, you certainly did. I think the women did steal that night for sure. Yeah, and you touched on it there. Obviously, you wanted to be a singer. I know that you wanted to do that originally. I know that you were, if I'm not mistaken, on American Idol. I'll tell you something that obviously I guarantee you didn't know. I've interviewed Clarissa a few times on this podcast in the past, and there was one occasion where we both sang a duet during an interview. So perhaps one day, if you're lucky enough, I might give you the opportunity to sing with me.
Oh my god, please let me have the honor. That would be like a dream come true.
Okay, next time for sure.
After I win.
After you win. Let's touch on that now. Yeah, you'll be traveling to the UK to take on Savannah Marshall. July the 1st is the date in Manchester. Yeah, obviously you boxed Savannah as an amateur, Franchon. Was it just the one fight you had? And if so, talk us through it.
Yeah, it was the one fight. I fought in an Olympic test event in London at the XL Arena. As I said, I was the top seed in the United States at middleweight at the time. And, you know, I was invited over for the test event. I was winning by 2 points going into the last round. And then by the end, I lost by 2 points. Apparently, you know, that's one of the reasons I don't leave it to the judges. And I make sure I fight to the ending bell because it's very unfortunate when that happens. But it was a great experience. And I always said I would love to come back to the UK and fight. And I would love to fight Savannah again because, you know, we're both different fighters now. We've both grown. We both tasted being a world champion. And I think it's another great fight to elevate women's boxing. She put on a great performance against Clarissa. And I think she'll be a great dancing partner for me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people tuned into her fight with Clarissa. It was the last fight that Marshall had. For me, I felt that Savannah got, you know, dominated pretty much every round by Clarissa. I didn't think the fight was close at all. Were you able to take anything from that, Franchon?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not easy. I fought Clarissa on my first fight. You know, Savannah had a great time to train from it. I took from it that she's tough, she's durable, and, you know, she's going to stick in there to the ending bell. I would love to see how I do against her. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You have one end, you know, that fight could have took a lot out of her. Or you got the other end where she wants to prove herself as world caliber level. But I'm not the person you want to prove it against. So, you know, we're just going to see what happens July 1st.
And one of the things about myself, I like to kind of tell it how it is. I don't really like to sit on the fence. But one of the things I was saying before Savannah fought Clarissa was that I just don't see Clarissa getting a decision here in the UK. And the reason I said that is because I felt that if Savannah is the aggressor in that fight, I don't see them giving Clarissa rounds boxing off the back foot. But obviously, Clarissa, you know, came out firing, hit Savannah early on with some massive shots. And I think Savannah was kind of shocked by the power that she had. Mm-hmm. And then obviously from that point onwards, like Clarissa was fighting off the back foot, but was walking Savannah onto so many shots that the way she dominated her, I don't think judges could have took it away from her. Is it a concern of yours, just because obviously you touched on that amateur fight that sounds very fishy, is it a concern of yours for officiating here in the UK away from home?
I'm a world champion, so everywhere I go is my home. I apologize. I have to commend that the UK and the commission, you know, called the fight as it was. They actually called it. I was in a crowd ringside, and even the fans who were from the UK were telling it how it was. So I'm very confident in my ability. I'm very confident in what I can do. And if I have officiating that will tell it how it is, I believe that I'll be victorious. At the end of the day, that's my main goal. That's what I'm coming to do. I've already been through situations where I didn't get a fair shake, but that's really not an issue now. I'm training, applying myself in the gym. My camp has been amazing. I have amazing people in my corner. So it's just going to be, you know, she better bring her best because I'm bringing everything I got.
And Franchon, how do you see this fight playing out for us as fans? And also, I wanted to ask if you're surprised at I'm guessing you probably know, being the betting underdog.
No, I'm not surprised that I'm the underdog. You look at the new fight that's announced between Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford. Errol Spence has 3 belts that he won and took from other fighters, and he's a major underdog against another talented fighter who has 1 belt. I have all the belts, and I'm a major underdog against somebody with no belts who got beat up their last fight. That's where I perform and I shine the best, when people count me out. If it was up to people, I would not be undisputed. I would have been probably retired after losing to Clarissa, but I came back, I made a name for myself, I made history, and I'm the undisputed champion of the world. So I can really care what people think or what they want to bet. They should be smart and bet on me and make a lot of money. And shoot, I might bet on myself. I always do. But I mean, people, I've learned this boxing game. People are going to like who they want to like. I'm not here to conform. I'm not here to fit in. I'm not here to be like anybody else. I'm here to be like Frashawn Cruz is earning a heavy hitting diva, undisputed champ of the world. And that's what they're going to get on July 1st.
And I absolutely cannot wait for the fight. I want to ask you about one female that I think UK fans are only just starting to hear about. Shadeja Green. I wanted to get your thoughts on her, Franchon. She seemingly brings a lot of punching power to the division. Do you have an opinion?
I mean, she's working her way up to an opportunity to face myself. I intend to be victorious July 1st. She's a mandatory for the WBC title. I'm happy. This is what the fight that I took against Clarissa back November 2016 was about. This is what the fight between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano is about. This is what we're here to do, is grow the sport. And I'm just, you know, kudos to her for working her way up. When her time comes to face me, we'll see who the top dog is. But for right now, I'm the top dog. And I, you know, I hope she continues to be victorious, and we'll see each other down the line.
And I love that, you know, in this 4-belt era, you can confidently say you're the top dog and no one can dispute it, because you're undisputed, because you have all 4. That's yeah, the fantastic thing about it. I want to put you on the spot with my last question slightly here. I like to ask this question to everyone that we speak to from overseas. If you don't have one on the top of your mind, it's totally fine. But I like to ask, favorite UK fighter, can be male or female, can be retired, can be active. If you have one, then let us know who it is, Franchon.
I got to figure it out. I think that my favorite UK fighter, well, from the amateurs, I have to give it to Nicola Adams, because she came through and she made a lot of history for women. Lennox Lewis. And I honestly, I'm going to give it to some of these new girls, like the Olympians that are fighting. They were on the undercard of Savannah and Clarissa. Caroline, I love her. And God, what is her name? She was like Olympic silver medalist and Olympic gold medalist. I got to see them when they fought on Savannah Marshall's undercard, and they were amazing. Any girl that's doing their thing, I'm always going to support. But yeah, I love everybody, so...
No, I like that list. It's unique and it's great.
I want to have a sing off against Tyson Fury. I think he's super charismatic. I think, you know, he just owns his personality, and he's a good fighter too. So,
yeah. Did you say you wanted a sing off with him?
Yeah, he's a little too big to spar or fight, but we can definitely have a sing off.
I think he only knows one song, but that would be interesting to hear. As long as it's not American Pie, I think he's got that one nailed down. Okay, well, listen, Franchon, before we let you go, I just wanted to say, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, particularly here in the UK, you know, I'm sure you've been given support over the years from UK boxing fans that, you know, love boxing. But any message to anyone from around the world that could be listening, if you want to sign out with a message, and also don't forget to drop those social media handles.
I just want to say thank you for the positive reception that myself and my husband received when we came there. You know, it's always an honor to bring my talents worldwide. I'm going to give a great show. Promise you guys won't hate me after I beat Savannah, but just know you're going to get everything, fashion, music, and a good ass whooping on the night of July 1st. You can check me out on Twitter and Instagram, TikTok at THEHHDIVA, and I'm on Facebook for Sean Cruz's Earn the Heavy Hitting Diva.
There we go. Make sure you go and follow. And this is going to be a cracking fight. I cannot wait for it. Listen, Franchon, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time and best of luck for July the 1st in
Manchester.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can't wait to hear the interview. Have a good night.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part of the show, usually the news segment, but no news to report just yet. Let's move straight to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here with a card that takes place tomorrow at the York Hall in Bethnal Green, London, over here. It's going to be live on Sky Sports. What do we have? We have, actually, I'm going to come to you straight away, Eddie. Roman Fury. I believe that's one of Tyson's many brothers. Did you ever meet Roman Fury when you was over here?
Nah, I don't think I have.
I know how big that family is. But yeah, Roman Fury, I'm pretty sure it's one. Well, it's definitely a relation, and I'm pretty sure it is one of his brothers. But anyway, he's 1-0. He's a cruiserweight. He gets in with Eric Nazarian, who's 29-32 with 4 draws. Nazarian, 32 losses, only been stopped 6 times. I'm expecting Roman Fury to win that one on points, just like the fight he won on his debut on points. Isaac Chamberlain on the card, good to see him out again. Friend of the show, Sam Gilly, he is 15-1. He's in a 6 rounder here at Super Welter against Ellis Corrie, who's 7-1 with a draw. All the best there to Sam Gilly. We got Hassan Azim, 6-0. He gets in with Ruben Angulo, who's 8-6 with 2 draws. That's over 6 rounds there at welterweight. We have Vidal Riley, 8-0, getting in with Aniz Taj, who's 7-3. It's an instant rematch between the two. It's an 8 rounder at cruiserweight. Last time, Vidal Riley had a few issues, I think, with Aniz Taj. There was a bit of bad blood in the build-up, and it was stopped on a cut. And Taj took some absolute bombs to the chin, and he looked extremely, extremely tough. He hadn't been stopped in his 2 previous losses, and now he gets back in with Vidal Riley. But I think he was causing Vidal a few problems. I think both guys were fighting on emotion, and it was a little bit of a car park type of fight at times. But if I was Vidal Riley's team, I'm not taking the rematch. You don't need to fight this guy again. But he's gone for it, and I think it's a bit silly, but credit to him for taking it. It's going to, I'm sure, deliver entertainment-wise. We're also going to see Caroline Dubois on the card. She's 6-0 with 5 KOs. She gets in with Yanina Del Carmen Lescano, who is 13-2. Never been stopped in her 2 losses. And I have been betting on Caroline Dubois to win on points pretty much every fight since she made her debut. And every single time she knocks people out and loses me money. But this time I've noticed that she's 6-4 to get the knockout. So this time there's value in her getting the knockout. Usually there's value in her winning on points. So I have made a small play for her to win by knockout again. But yeah, if she ends up going the distance, then I'm never betting on her again because she consistently loses my bets for me. We've also got Aaron McKenna. He was supposed to be boxing Shaquille Thompson. He's 16-0. He gets in with Usima Lima, who's 10-0. It's a bit of a late notice opponent switch, but 10-0 undefeated. I've never heard of him. It's for the vacant WBC International Middleweight title. Looking for his record, 8 knockouts. He's from Angola. He's born in Angola, but resides in Portugal. And yeah, I'm looking through the record. I don't recognize any names, but apparently there's potential that Aaron McKenna could have his hands full. I would still lean for him to get the stoppage, considering it's over 10 rounds. I think you can get a decent price on that. And then, yeah, the main event, Fraser Clark, 6-0. He gets in with Marius Wack, 37-9. Marius Wack coming off a knockout win last time out against a guy who was 8-2 with a draw, but prior to that was coming off 3 losses in a row. A points loss to Huey Fury back in December 2020, a knockout loss in round 6 to Arslanbek Makhmudov, and then a points loss over 12 to Kevin Lorena, who obviously is a former cruiserweight. So yeah, that one was back in September of last year. So he's in horrific form. He's not the guy he used to be. But will Fraser Clark bang him out early? I'd be quite surprised. Wax still only got the 4 stoppage losses in his 9 losses. Yeah, like I say, Makhmudov knocked him out in six rounds. Makhmudov can absolutely whack. Martin Bacoli got him out in round eight. Jarrell Big Baby Miller got him out in round nine. And Povetkin got him out in the 12th and final round. So he's never been stopped in the first half of a fight. So I wouldn't mind taking a little look there at the under-over. Not sure what that's set at, but I would be quite surprised if Clark got him out in the first half of the fight. You know, because I think he's had a decent bit of notice, Marius Wack, so he should be relatively fit, should be, but obviously he is up there in age. But Clark, for me, doesn't really put his punches together fantastically well for a heavyweight. I think he's more of a kind of, he'll grind you down, but he's not going to bang you out with one shot, and I don't think he's much of a combination puncher either. So, yeah, that's just my opinion. Moving now to the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, USA. It's going to be live on DAZN. It's a homecoming for friend of the show, Regis Progray. Rougarou, 28-1. It's his 30th pro fight. He gets in with Danielito Zorrilla, who is 17-1. It's a defense of Progray's WBC World Super Lightweight title. Had Regis on the show a few weeks ago, and he was quite honest with me, and I was quite honest with him. I said, I don't know much about this guy. He said, neither do I. But one thing we do know is that he's going to be hungry. He's from Puerto Rico. Whenever I see that, I like to throw it out there that I can roll my R's. Progray is going to obviously be the massive favourite. I'm hoping and expecting him to stop this guy here. And his claim to fame, this guy, Zorrilla, is that he went the distance in his sole defeat to Arnold Barboza Jr. Back in July of last year. So that's about that. On the undercard, we're going to see Britain's Ramla Ali, 8-0. She gets out once again on the road. She defends her IBF Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. She gets in with Julissa Guzman, who's 12-2 with two draws. We're also going to see Shakram Giasov, 13-0, get in with Harold Calderon, who's 27-0. I think Giasov's been out the ring for quite a while, if I'm not mistaken. That's a 12-rounder there. No belt on the line or anything, but apparently a 12-rounder. Somebody's own must go. And then moving now to this card, it goes down apparently on Sunday, so I'm going to assume it's probably more like Saturday night, and hopefully it's a good one. It's in Australia at the Gold Coast Convention Center in Queensland. Again, not entirely sure what time that's going to start. I think it's going to be live on Showtime in the US. We're going to have to stream it over here in the UK. On the card, we're going to see Sam Goodman, 14-0 in a 12-rounder at Super Bantam against Rais Alim, who's 20-0. I think that's going to be a really good fight. I'm definitely picking Alim to get the job done there, though. And then the main event, Tim Su, 22-0, a defense of his WBO interim world super welterweight title against Carlos Ocampo, who's 35-2, who at one stage in his career was kind of looked at as a bit of a joke because Errol Spence managed to knock him out in just one round. But obviously, he went back to whichever country Carlos Ocampo's from, I've momentarily forgot, and he picked up a couple of wins. And he popped up again back on the scene when he beat when he got a fight with the Towering Inferno, Sebastian Fandora, and he went the distance with Fandora. So that was really unexpected, because obviously Fandora was kind of banging people out, and all of a sudden he got in there with Ocampo and didn't manage to get him out of there. So I think he gained a little bit of credibility there despite losing the fight. But now he is going to Australia, and like I say, gets in with Tim Su. It's a tough one. I'd probably be quite surprised with the early knockout for Tim Su. I think it probably goes a few rounds and maybe even points for Tim Su, which I think is about 3-1. I just think just because Errol Spence knocked him out in a round, it was just, it looks like anyway, a bit of an off night. And the Towering Inferno, I'd say, is probably banging more people out, more credible people out than Tim Su was. So, that gives you something to think about there. I think it'll go long, and I wouldn't mind looking at the over-under on that one. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the undisputed super middleweight female champion of the world, Miss Franchon Cruz DAZN. Then in part two, we did the news. Oh, no, we didn't, because there was none. But then we did the preview part, and that is where the show comes to an end. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 400 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the reigning and undisputed super middleweight female champion of the world. Of course, that being Mrs. Franchon Cruz de Zerm. What a blast it has been. Thank you all for joining us on this milestone 400 shows. The biggest thanks of all, as ever, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. If you do have a spare minute, please leave us a review on iTunes, and we'll see you all again same time next week.